Jerry, good to be back with you, this time in the comfort of your home. Thanks for taking the time to talk to our listeners. How have you been and what's sort of been the focus since the last time we dropped in and heard a bit about what's going on?
Firstly, more thanks go to you for talking about dropping in. You've come all the way from Melbourne to Perth, obviously for family, but you've included me in and gets me out to Melbourne listeners. And I'd love to update them on all things that matter, that should matter, particularly about vulnerable people, people marginalised, people who make up the prison population, juvenile, children's prisons and adult prisons. They're the forgotten, and there's a high recidivism rate because we don't support them. We work carcerally, brutally, confinement, and don't work to understand their lives and the unfairnesses that they actually have from the beginning of life, and that they've suffered with no fault of their own, and not had the nurture that they should have had. Some of it's been absent from the beginning, and some of it's been stressing because their parents have felt the same predicaments that they felt, marginalised and left behind by the sins of the nation. So it's up to us to make the difference in people's lives, or get others to understand, even premiers and ministers and political entities or whatever, to understand that we should be leaving no one behind, holding no one back. And we definitely do that. We definitely do that. We do leave people behind, despite what politicians say, and we do that intentionally, and we hold someone back, like prisoners. There's no prisoner rights, there's no Medicare for prisoners, so they come out worse than what they went in. It's only less than a couple of months ago we launched a book. So I wrote a book, not because I believe in books. I'm a firm believer that no book has ever changed the world to its betterment, to its collective betterment, or to its potential best that we could be. And I've always been, even though I've been a researcher and I've done a lot of research work and research projects and even ghostwritten quite a few major texts, I took this book on because the mother asked me to, the mother of Cleveland Dodd. The book's actually called Cleveland Dodd, Child of the Desert Sunrise. And he was 16. He died in Unit 18 of Banksia Hill Prison. Unit 18 is segregated in an adult prison, Casuarina Prison, a maximum security prison. 1,000 adults in there, and any number of kids have been in there, from half a dozen to about 20 at a time, and it's still open. We objected. Unit 18. It was formed in 2023 in July. It was rushed into existence because they couldn't. Well, they were doing all things wrong by the way they were coming across to the children inside Banksia Hill, and all sorts of volatility exploded. Longings and pains and sufferings translated as protests and rebelliousness and conduct which most people find unbecoming, but has been their suffering and their surround since the beginning of life. No one listens to them, and they play out and act out. And all they're doing is really calling out for help to get the support that they should be getting, which they don't get. We've endured 2 years of a coronial inquest. The findings came in on December the 8th, and I was there at the coroner's court with the mother, Nadine Dodd, when we got the findings. They were pretty strong findings for the most part. Not everything on the wish list for bleeding heart leftists like myself and for people who want to make a difference in people's lives, turning them around, which has been my life's bent. But I believe in doing everything that we can by everybody, starting at the bottom end up, and not turning our downtrodden into prisons, which are the rubbish tips of this nation. 132 prisons in this nation, 17 juvenile prisons, children's prison, and 115 adult prisons. And they're as if they're the rubbish tips of this nation. That's how they're treated. So, you know, people are nominally locked up for 12 hours overnight, and 12 hours is half the day, and then it can be rolling lockdowns of 24 hours straight at a whim's notice, and or on average 16 to 17 hours is not uncommon. And sometimes in adult prisons there's gross overcrowding, so there's 3 or 4 to a prison cell. And in children's prisons it's usually 1 to a cell, but sometimes 2, but 1 to a cell. But, you know, human spirit is an immortal call. Wasn't born into being confined in small spaces that you can, in some of these prison cells you can touch both walls by outstretching your arms. And it's a stir-crazy existence, and that we've got this is an abomination. We've got 18th-century prisons here in the Western world, if we can say that, maybe most of the world, with the exception of more progressive countries like the Scandinavian countries, Norway, Finland, Sweden, which actually have a whole different experience. It's custodial, but it's not bars, it's unlocked doors, and it's human respect and dignity, and they have the lowest recidivism rates. So if we want to compel change, we've got to understand what they do, because what they do works. 90% of children in Norway, for instance, 90% of children in Norway who offend once do not offend again. That's what we've got to take away as a lesson. 90% of children that offend once in Western Australia and pretty much across the country offend again. Not just twice, but 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 times. And some children have gone in 20, 30, 40 times in their ages 10 to 18 and have spent all their teens from 13 to 18, all their birthdays in children's prisons. So that's what we're faced with in this country. We've got the financial firepower in this country, no matter what's being said about tight budgets and gross domestic product and productivity. This nation is an affluent nation, one of the richest on the planet, the 12th richest in fact, and it has a treasure trove of $16 trillion, which it doesn't talk about. It only talks about the GDP and the GSP, gross state product or gross domestic product from, on the national level. And it concocts all this story about the budget that we have. What we have in this nation is the GDP, which is the pay packet of any similar analogy to a household, convoluted with the capacity of this nation's financial fiscal power, when we don't include the treasure trove of $15 trillion in that equation of the liquid and capital assets this country actually has. So we have to take notice of the facts and work with the facts, not with the propaganda that actually leaves people behind, because there's an assumption, it's a demonizing assumption, we can't afford to. We can afford to. And we can afford what the Norwegians actually have. Life transformative, immersive culture that works with young people to turn their lives around. And they've got the lowest recidivism rates, not just in Europe, but the world.
And so you've outlined all this in your book.
I have. It's a dedication I'd like to read from the book because it tells the whole story. Because as I said, I'm not one who believes in books, but I wrote it as a memoir to young one, Cleveland, whose name we've got permission to mention from the mother and all the family and the father too. And I wrote in the dedication, thank you to Nadine, Cleveland's mum, who both insisted and inspired me to write this book. Most days of the last 2 years, we spoke of the injustices Cleveland endured, which his family had been devastated by. Nadine's harrowing journey guided me to write this book. Nadine prosecuted the importance of writing, telling her son's tragedy. Nadine does not believe that her son's tragedy was not foreseeable. Nadine asked me to include what I've been through the last 2 decades in calling out Australia's children's prisons. We're all harangued by the loss of Cleveland. Of every child who should have a better life, if Banksia Hill, for instance, was and is a bastion of the life transformative, instead of a turnstile to adult incarceration. I believe no book makes a significant difference. Well, of course, I hope I am wrong. The Dean hopes that this testament to Cleveland brings on the investiture of changes that, if they had been realised decades ago, would have ensured the thriving of Cleveland. It's a forensic detail of everything that led up to Cleveland's death, a forensic detail of the boy's life before incarceration in child's prison, before being failed the first time at Banksia Hill. Actually, the first time he was failed was with the courts. They should have actually got him into life transformative diversionary programs. Most of them don't exist, but that's what they should be compelling governments to actually put in place. Justices have that capacity. And the president of the Children's Court, as a result of this, actually has stood up and actually has been rarer than once in a generation a leading figure. The president of the Children's Court is also a presiding judge in the Children's Court. Has said more needs to be done. And if you want to create a criminal or a monster, this is how you do it, by making them go stir crazy behind bars and invalidating their sufferings and their unfairnesses. And we can't change or turn around the life of a young one. An 11-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, 15, 17, 18-year-old, then who are we? What sort of society are we? And what sort of society are we creating? You know, prepared to demonize children until they become recidivists as adults and then finish up and ruin lives going in and out of our prisons for longer